Genesis Communication Network? Well, this is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communication Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, of course, our guest today has got to be Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And is Dr. Cuddy there?
Yes.
Is Dr. Cuddy there?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, then I'll let Dr. Cuddy talk. We're talking about his second part two on population control. Dennis, go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, this will be part three.
Oh, part three, all right.
The first two parts were more or less a chronology, and that's where this part continues. We were up to, as far as the chronology goes, mid-1980s. And part three begins with number 33, which is at 1986. And the topic is dialectics, Rockefellers, and population control, because it all sort of goes together. And the reason I included this particular one is in 1986, the Rockefeller Foundation gave a grant of $6.3 million to various population programs. If your listeners recall, in previous weeks, I was talking how through the Population Council and other venues, the foundation would put up a lot of money for various population programs. Usually it's population reduction or fertility control, something like that. And the reason I put this particular one, 1986, is Reverend Theodore Hesburgh. He's a Catholic priest, not a bishop, not an archbishop, not a cardinal, but a Catholic priest. Is president of the University of Notre Dame, a Catholic institution, and he has served as chairman of the Rockefeller Foundation's Board of Trustees from 1977 to 82. Now, that's rather important. You would think population control, Catholicism, they don't go together. But the point that I'm making here is that there are what I call the global power elite in all kinds of walks of life. There's people who call themselves Catholics, Jews, Baptists, Buddhists, whatever. And there's a reason for that. If you're going to have any good movement towards a world government, sort of towards an end time and so on, you've got a lot of people that you have to include in that. You have to have certain Catholics to persuade other Catholics, Baptists to persuade other Baptists, and so on. And so there are those who are these globalist power elite types, such as this one individual, this Reverend Theodore Hesburgh. He's a priest. Now, you would think after a long time in a prestigious position, like president of the University of Notre Dame, he would have risen, but they don't do that. He deliberately, Theodore Hesburgh, remained just at the priestly level because he was on all sorts of foundation boards and doing all kinds of things and allowed to do so. So that's why I put that. This. He was head of this foundation's Board of Trustees for 6 years, from 77 to 82, and all during this time they had this type of population program funding, which usually the Vatican frowns upon, but in this particular case, here he is, and that's what they're doing. In that same year, 1986, William Henry Draper III, there was a William Henry Draper, then Jr., and the third, this one is a member of Skull and Bones. He becomes head in that year of the UN Development Program, and he was recommended for that position by Vice President George H.W. Bush, who was at that time was Vice President, and he's also, as you know, your listeners know, a Skull and Bones member. And Draper held that position until 1993, when he would become Vice Chairman of Population Action International. And we'll pick up after the break.
And I think what's so important is that people understand there is an elite that looks upon us common folks as just human capital. They want to manipulate and control us, and well, just like you want to herd a cattle. It's just that they have no relationship to us common people. and they're dangerous.
Attention, attention everyone. A brand new invention just released. It's called Wrist Ease, the new patented portable ergonomic wrist support. Wrist Ease comforts your wrists from the sometimes painful tasks of typing, writing, using a mouse, or adding machine. Unlike most conventional wrist pads that are either attached to a mouse pad or lay flat in front of your keyboard, Wrist Ease is totally portable and ideal for laptop users and technicians who are constantly on the go. Wrist Ease is perfect for children doing homework or playing video games. Wrist Ease provides the proper comfort and support for all ages and makes a great stocking stuffer. Honest, Wrist Ease provides comfort for victims of carpal tunnel syndrome and other repetitive injuries. You can order Wrist Ease now at wristease.com. That's Wrist Ease, W-R-I-S-T-E-A-S-E, wristease.com. Once again, wristease.com.
Good morning, honey. Wow, the weather is beautiful, the cabin is terrific, and it's the first day of our vacation.
Yeah.
Honey, is there something wrong?
Yeah, I just realized we forgot to pack the travel Berkey system.
Let me hang up.
I can't drink this cabin water. And what am I going to do when I'm out on the lake? Now the whole vacation is ruined.
Honey, cheer up. I brought our Sport Berkey purifiers.
What?
Yeah, I know you're picky about not having pathogenic bacteria, organic chemicals, heavy metals or foul tastes and odors in the water, so I packed our Sport Berkey purifiers.
You know, this is a terrific cabin. And wow, have you noticed the beautiful weather?
Don't ruin your vacation. Get a travel Berkey today for only $209 or get a Sport Berkey for only $39. Call 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438 or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Travel Berkey not available in Iowa.
The statistics are heart-wrenching. According to the CWC, of the 43 million people who have served in the major wars, from the Revolutionary War to the Gulf War, 3 million never made it home alive. Most likely, each one of us can say we either knew someone who served or know a brave soul who is currently serving our country. Now there is a unique way to pay tribute to the courageous men and women who spend their lives protecting our freedom and to those who have lost their lives doing so. Davis Products is offering high-quality, solid-cast aluminum memorial markers for your American flag. Each memorial marker is specifically designed to represent one of 15 wars. All markers include a 3/8 inch pointed and threaded aluminum rod, painted and highlighted for an appearance that is unforgettable. What better way to pay homage to our enlisted loved ones? Davis Products memorial markers are only $9 a piece and can be ordered by calling 814-827-4946. That's 814-827-4946. Or visit davis-products.com. That's davis-products.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest today is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And we were just saying before we went to the break that there really is an elite, and those of you who have certainly have read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or read Dr. Cuddy's books, The Globalist, or the Now is the Dawning, or the one we're trying to get published now, of course, which is Secret Records Reveal, will realize there really is a ruling elite of our country, and they belong to a number of secret societies, and even open societies, but they all have a common desire for control over the lives of the people, and of course, they hate individual freedom, such as we have in this country, and are dedicated to this idea of a world power system that they will control, where they will enslave not only the people of America, but people throughout the world, because these people have a different worldview. And they really believe in noblesse oblige. They believe that common people like you and me are incapable of managing their own affairs, and they abhor these concepts of individual freedom, especially freedom under God. So let's get back to Dr. Cuddy's chronology of population control, and that's what, part three now?
Yes, sir.
Go right ahead.
Right, and what we're doing mainly is looking at the Rockefeller aspect to this. As I was saying, that in 1986 you had William Henry Draper III, Skull and Bones. He was recommended for the UN Development Program head by George H.W. Bush, Vice President Skull and Bones. And he occupied that position through the Bush presidency until 1993, when he became Vice Chairman of Population Action International. Now, you need to remember that the UNDP, Development Program, is really sort of an adjunct of the World Bank, and it promotes a population reduction in third world countries that way through funding, World Bank funding. And it's also worth remembering that both of these individuals, Draper and Bush, that they belong to Skull and Bones, which is a secret society. Bush and Draper belong to it, and it requires, Skull and Bones requires its members to take secret oath and secret proceedings. Now remember that, a secret society with a secret oath and secret proceedings. All right, now remember those three things, because relevant to that, President John F. Kennedy, in an April 27, 1961 speech at the Waldorf Astoria, declared, quote, "The very word secrecy is repugnant to a free and open society, and we are, as a people, inherently and historically opposed to secret societies, to secret oaths, and to secret proceedings," end quote. Now, the next year, 1987, moving in the chronology, you have another Skull and Bones member, William F. Buckley, has a TV show for many years. It's called Crossfire. And I remember watching that periodically. And on this particular date, I was watching it, and the president of Planned Parenthood was his guest. And Planned Parenthood, as you'll recall, in my chronology, is funded for many years by the Rockefeller Foundation. Now, the president was a person named Faye Wattleton. Now, she's an African-American. And she acknowledged on that show, and I have a videotape of it, she says, quote, "We have received contributions from people who want to support us because they want all black women to stop having children," end quote. Now, think about that. Think about why an organization like Planned Parenthood would accept such funds given for such a purpose rather than refusing such contributions for that purpose. I mean, after all, she's an African-American herself. And the point is, just like with Hesburgh being a Catholic, there are people, regardless of ethnicity, religion, you know, whatever, who are part of this movement. It does not matter to them that other the masses out there are being reduced in number purposefully. And you also need to remember that the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, had what she called the Negro Project. That was her term. And in her proposal for that project, she said, this is Sanger, quote, "The mass of Negroes, particularly in the South, still breed carelessly and disastrously, and is from that portion of the population least intelligent and fit," end quote. In October of 1939, Sanger wrote a letter to a Procter & Gamble heir. His name was Clarence Gamble. And she related how they would deal with such a problem. They would actually, I haven't got it here, but she said that he was going to hire a bunch of black ministers, you know, to sort of calm the black masses down if they got the idea that they were trying to reduce their population of that particular race. Well, the next month after that letter she wrote to Clarence Gamble, head of the heir to Procter & Gamble, the very next month was November of 1939, and in Sanger's Birth Control Review, that's her, you know, periodical, it commended the Nazi birth control program, saying that, quote, "The German program has been much more carefully worked out than the Italian program. The need for quality as well as quantity is recognized," end quote. A few years before that, same periodical, 1933, April issue of Birth Control Review, there was an article that was titled "Eugenic Sterilization and Urgent Need," and that was written by Nazi doctor Ernst Rudin, and Rudin was funded greatly by the Rockefeller Foundation. This is that Nazi doctor. I think Rockefeller Foundation funded a whole floor of his research over in Germany.
At the Kaiser Wilhelm Institute,
yeah,
though, right?
Yeah, the Kaiser Wilhelm on brain research, or some euphemistic title. All right, that same year, 1987, in this chronology, the Rockefeller Foundation funded in part a publication of a book called The Secret Constitution and the Need for Constitutional Change. It's by a fellow named Arthur Miller. He's written several books. But in this particular one, the reason I'm including that and, you know, why Rockefeller Foundation is funding this, this is what Miller asserts. He says, quote, "A pervasive system of thought control exists in the United States. The citizenry is indoctrinated by employment of the mass media and the system of public education. People are told what to think about. The old order is crumbling. Nationalism should be seen as a dangerous social disease. A new vision is required to plan and manage the future. See, it's, population control isn't just, you know, reducing fertility or abortions. It's managing people. Manage your life, my life. So continue with the quote. Manage the future. Miller says, a global vision that will transcend national boundaries and eliminate the poison of nationalistic solutions. A new constitution is necessary. Americans really have no choice. For constitutional alteration will come whether or not it is liked or planned for. Ours is the age of a planned society. No other way is possible, end quote. You can see why the Rockefellers would love this guy. So anyway, they funded that book in part. That's 1987. And the next year, of course, is a campaign year right off the beginning of the year, February 10, 1988. Presidential campaign, Washington Post. Sidney Blumenthal's writing this article. And he's interviewed David Rockefeller, and he's asking him about Bush. And so Rockefeller comes back and says, oh, he, George Bush, is one of us, you know, the member of the establishment. Rockefeller goes on and says, if Bush were president, he would be in a better position than anyone else to pull together the people in the country who believe that we are, in fact, living in one world and have to act that way, end quote. Okay, so Bush becomes president. He's there till 1992. And, of course, you'll all remember his famous New World Order speech after Saddam had invaded Kuwait. Well, actually, he gave a New World Order speech 6 months early in San Francisco, but everybody pretends like it was Brent Scowcroft, you know, riding around in that little boat up there at Kenny Bunkport that gave Bush the term, which is not a lot of nonsense. I've got to quote Bush back in, you know, back at the beginning of the year, in, I think it's San Francisco, where he said, we're going to have this new world order, and it'll come about, there's this tyrant, and, you know, he'll do things, and we'll have to respond. It's like, you know, 7 months in advance, they're forecasting Saddam. But anyway, so the next to last year, January of 91, that Draper fellow again, William Henry Draper III, he gives a speech in January in Washington. And in the speech, he reveals that population reduction is a key component of President Bush's, quote, New World Order. So see there, it's not as though this is something just isolated to leftists somewhere who, you know, support abortion or Planned Parenthood or whatever. You have individuals such as Draper with these population efforts recommended by Bush to be in a UN position and then revealing they're part of Bush, the supposed conservatives' New World Order, is population reduction. And so now we're up to the next year, the last year of the Bush administration. The next campaign for the presidency is coming about. They're campaigning in 1992. There's an election held early in November, November 11th. Well, actually, before that. And so right after the election of Bill Clinton, you have a letter written on November 11th by a fellow named Mark Tucker. And what he is the president of the National Center on Education and the Economy, NCEE. And he's writing this letter to a board member, Hillary Clinton. And there's a number of famous, you know, board members. I think Mario Cuomo was chairman, too, and so on. But anyway, he's writing this letter to Hillary. And the way he starts the letter is, he says, I've recently been in the office of another NCEE board member, David Rockefeller, Jr. Okay, so this isn't just David Rockefeller. This elitist concept carries on to Jr. as well. And he says, Jr. was there and celebrating Bill Clinton's election as President of the United States. And Tucker goes on and explains how this, he's writing in this letter to Hillary, he said, this is great. Now, this will give us a chance to implement our plan to integrate education into a human resources development system, quote, that literally extends from cradle to grave and is the same system for everyone, young and old, poor and rich. And then he concludes by saying radical changes in attitudes, values, and beliefs are required to move any combination of these agendas, end quote.
But, of course, he's not really talking about rich, the elite like himself. That all of these things are really for us common folks. There is this intellectual elite. I mean, this organization that Mark Tucker was working for, I think it was funded by the Carnegie Foundation, Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller, the elite controlling the rest of us. Understand what's going on and prepare for the worst. Have you made preparations to look after yourself and your family in case there's a national emergency or a terrorist attack? Well, I want to tell you that the government's looking after their people. In fact, plans have been made to protect people of high-ranking position in government, but they're not making any preparations for the average individual, so you're going to have to look after yourself. If you'd like information on long-term food storage, if you'd like information on the other items you would need in case of a national emergency, why don't you give us a call of 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927 and ask for the emergency food catalog. We'll get it right off to you and we'll get the items shipped directly from Ready Reserve Foods. That's 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You're going to have to begin making preparations to look after yourself.
Hello, folks. This is Alex Jones introducing you to the incredible Berkey Solar Charger, your source for free solar electricity. This portable system is the size of a book when folded and small enough to fit into a briefcase, handbag, or glove compartment. The Berkey Solar Charger has been designed to power the Berkey Lights LED lamps as well as other applications such as mobile phones, radios, digital cameras. And PDAs when electricity is not available. Its multi-voltage capabilities, multiple adapters, and rechargeable batteries provide for a flexible source of auxiliary backup power. Simply place the Berkey Solar Charger in the sun, plug in your application, and you have power. Disconnect your application, and the system automatically begins charging its own rechargeable batteries. Get the incredible Berkey Solar Charger for only $75 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's toll-free, 888-803-4438.
Hi, folks. Jack Browning from Midas Resources. The real money, folks. Let's review a few things from the past year. November 2003 to November 2004. The Dow has ranged from 9,800 to 10,300, a 5% increase. The dollar's value has dropped from 96 cents to 70 cents against the euro, a 24% decrease in spending power against the gold-backed euro. Gold has gone from the 390s to the 440s, a 16% increase in real money. Precious metals are the safe haven in today's hectic marketplace. To learn how to protect your shrinking dollar, call Midas Resources today at 1-800-686-2237. Remember, gold is liquid, private, and portable. Call now before your buying power shrinks even more dramatically. That's Midas Resources at 800-686-2237.
Shelly, you look exhausted. What's wrong?
I am so tired. I just get so hot at night and can't sleep. I have tried everything, all kinds of fans, sheets, pillows, you name it, I've tried it.
My husband has always been a hot sleeper. He's never had a good night's sleep. Then we discovered something that really helped. It's called the Bedfan Personal Cooling System.
The what?
The Bedfan Personal Cooling System. It will keep you cool all night long and will work for everyone that sleeps hot. No matter what the reason, you can see it at bedfan.com.
How well are you sleeping? Are you getting the rest your body needs? Sleep disorder centers across the country recommend that you must stay cool to get a good night's sleep. The Bedfan will keep you cool and give you the restful sleep you deserve. With our 30-day 100% guarantee, you risk nothing. Are you a hot sleeper? Is your partner a hot sleeper? Or are you looking for the perfect gift for that person who has everything? The Bedfan is the answer.
Visit bedfan.com. That's bedfan.com.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy, and we're talking really about the plans of the elite for your future. And until people really understand that there really are people who abhor these ideas of individual liberty, because they believe that they have the right to rule. In fact, David Rockefeller told a friend of mine, a congressman, you know, some men are born to rule, but most men are just born to be ruled. And he feels he's the one who has the right to rule the rest of us. And there really is a ruling aristocracy. Of course, they like to give this impression of democracy. Oh, how they're wedded to democracy and wedded to these ideas of freedom. They don't believe in democracy. They don't believe in freedom. They want control, and that's what's coming down the line very, very rapidly. And until you understand that, you can't understand this recent revelation where they have built in for many years into your little cell phone a little switch there that can be activated electronically without your knowledge so that they can listen to all your conversations. Whether your telephone's on or not, your cell phone becomes a listening device for the government to monitor what you're saying. And they were using that on the local mafioso, and when they challenged their right to use this evidence, why, the courts held it was perfectly all right. In other words, your cell phone is now a listening device. And actually, some of the computers actually have that as well. If you want the documentation, we have it. But you see, we can't let the American people realize that the elite want to know everything about us. They're collecting dossiers, and now they can monitor. Well, if you have a cell phone or a computer, some computers, but if you have a cell phone, they can monitor everything you say in the bedroom, and you don't even know that they're listening. Go right ahead, Dennis.
Sure, and TVs, too. You're not safe anywhere. So, the elite have this, as you said, the noblesse oblige, you know, and we have the proper breeding. Like Cecil Rhodes and John Ruskin before him said that we're the best northern blood. Is the way they're really into that, you know, bloodlines and marrying within bloodlines, and that's why a lot of them you'll find a breed cattle or horses. You know, they're really into breeding, and so they look at us as just a bunch of, you know, animals that they can breed or limit the population or whatever. And the last thing I was mentioning was about NCEE, National Center on Education and Economy, and it was largely a Carnegie effort with one qualification. They interconnect a lot of these, sort of like the interlocking boards of directors. So even though NCEE was a generally Carnegie outfit, you had David Rockefeller Jr. on the board. Plus, what you want to remember is when you said it's Carnegie, Ford, Rockefeller, and so on. The person who really came up with this idea wasn't Carnegie. It was the governor of the state where I am. He used to be, anyway, Jim Hunt. He went up to David Hamburg, who was head of Carnegie at the time, and said, look, you know, let's link up education and the economy. And so Hamburg took his lead. Hunt had been a Ford Foundation fellow himself and had earlier been the fair-haired boy that the elite had lined up for the issue of health. I won't belabor this, but I've been through it in the past. They sent an Ursula Anderson. You can look her up on the Internet back in the 70s. I think she's over in England now, still alive, as a physician down here. What the feds wanted to do, HEW, wanted to have a child health plan that they could use as a model for all the 50 states. And so Hunt, you know, chomping at the bit, jumped at that. And so he became the experimental project and shipped some to Mrs. Andrew Young, who was the UN ambassador at the time. His wife was head of the International Year of the Child for here, and she wanted, you know, 50 copies to distribute all over the place. And so I caught on to that and became, branded as the leading opponent of that thing, and was exposing it all over. And Hunt's a rather nasty fellow. He doesn't forget things like that. So he's held against me ever since. But anyway, when we caught on to him on that, he shifted gears towards education and the economy. And he's the fellow who way back said, we got to get the kids down to 2 years of age, you know, because that's when their values are shaped, and, you know, get them into the daycare centers. And he developed, you know, this Kellogg cereal called Smart Start. Well, that's from him. I mean, that was his program, and they named it after his program, Smart Start. So he's a rather nasty fellow. But anyway, Hunt was on the board of this outfit, too, NCEE. And when Hunt had his first state health plan came out, which he was very proud of, in there I wrote up how in a couple of places it linked religion and mental illness and mental retardation. So, you know, he was sort of at the forefront of linking those two things up as well. But anyway, back to this thing. So it's not just a health issue, not just an abortion issue. When they talk about fertility and controlling population, as I mentioned at the beginning of this series, population control isn't just that. It's not numbers. It's actually controlling how you live. They want to manage you, manage your existence, manage your life, manage your education, manage your future. You know, you will go here. You will be put in this slot.
We'll be right back there, Dennis. We'll be back in a moment.
Okay.
If you'd like a copy of this show, come to GCNLive.com and reserve it today. Or call toll-free 877-300-7645.
According to the American Diabetes Association, more than 18 million people in the U.S. have diabetes. Most people with diabetes have risk factors such as obesity, high blood pressure, and cholesterol, which increase their risk for heart disease. For example, more than 65% of people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. Finding out you or your loved ones have diabetes can be scary. This is why, as your trusted online partner in health, we are committed to bringing you products that help you make informed decisions about your health. At researchherbs.com, you can learn more about GlucoCare, a highly effective and safe natural herbal supplement formulated specifically to help maintain optimal blood sugar levels. As with all products featured on researchherbs.com, GlucoCare is the result of several years of rigorous development and is backed by numerous clinical trials and experimental studies. Visit us online at researchherbs.com or call 1-800-845-3841 to learn more. That's 1-800-845-3841.
Terrorism, terrorism, chemical attacks, dirty bombs, fallout, biological attack, anthrax, and to top it all off, duct tape and plastic. Alarming words for our time. But how do you protect your family during such a crisis? The video sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout was developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government. Anyone can follow the simple instructions. It's presented by a housewife as they walk you step by step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. If you're not the type who waits till it's too late, then you need the video sheltering in place. Get the critical information you need now for only $29 plus shipping by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. And tell them Alex Jones sent you. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at murkywater.com.
It's a fact. You can legally eliminate credit card debt, which has been fraudulently created by the banks. Since its creation in 1913, the Federal Reserve has not been held responsible for its own debt. So why should you, the hardworking American, be harassed for yours? There's a double standard when it comes to being responsible for debt, and unlike the Federal Reserve, the people of this country can't print more money when needed. Day of Jubilee has created a successful program designed for people that want to stop harassing calls and threatening letters from bill collectors. This is not a debt consolidation company. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their credit card debt instead of living each day in fear. It's time to turn your life around. Call Day of Jubilee, open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Standard Time at 920-293-8024. That's 920-293-8024 and ask for Robert. Don't wait any longer to get your life back in order.
We have Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and our guest is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Now, first of all, Dr. Cuddy's writings can be found at newswithviews.com. That's newswithviews.com. And so if you go there, you'll actually see his name on the list of contributors. And then you go and you simply go down. You could pick up all these wonderful articles. And if I were you, I would simply pull them down and put them into a loose leaf folder and read them through many times because there's a great deal of valuable information there. Secondly, we do carry several of Dr. Cuddy's books, The Timeline for the New World Order and Education. We carry his book, Cover Up. Are there any more of the 911 prior knowledge around?
No, they were going to reprint it, but then Hearthstone went out. They had even gotten an index for the thing, but then they folded up.
Well, that's such a shame. Well, maybe if we can get your other book. Now, the other thing is, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Cuddy has written a wonderful book some years ago called Secret Records Revealed, a very important book, and it's been out of print for some time, and they want a fantastic amount of money for it. We want to reprint that book, and we're giving you an opportunity for a pre-publication offer on this, and you can get a full case of his books for $149.95 plus shipping. And, of course, you'll help him. You'll help us get the book reprinted, and you'll help yourself because you'll have a case of his book. Now, it has an index in it, which it didn't have before. It has an updating to bring you up to date with what's going on. Secret Records Revealed is one of the most important books and will help you as you try to convince your friends and your family and your neighbors of what's really going on. And so if you'd like to participate, well, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. And tell us, give us your Visa, MasterCard, and tell us you'd like to get a case of the books. We will not bill you until we have the pledges in, and we're about a quarter of the way towards where we need to be so we can actually get those books in print. But we do hope many of you will give serious consideration. You'll get a case of his books for $149.95. And you can sell them on the Internet, or you can do whatever you want to with them. But we need to get this book in print, and we need to have you helping us get the book out. So, Dr. Cuddy, why don't you just go ahead?
Making one pitch to follow up what you just said, Secret Records Revealed is a very good book in the sense that it was the first book. And now, as you said, it'll have an index, a good index, and an epilogue updating it to today. It was about the secret society of Cecil Rhodes from which all of this flows. Any of you who are interested in the plan for the world government, so this is basically where it comes from. There are other elements, Skull and Bones and the Fabian Socialists, and I do mention them in there, but this is the first book, which is a comprehensive book about the Rhodes Scholars and how they flowed from Cecil Rhodes' plan. And it has an appendix with a list of Rhodes Scholars that you would find very useful in talking to people about what's been going on. And so I would, again, highly recommend that. Also, what Dr. Stan said about the News with Views, you'll see an array of different articles on different subjects, 9/11, the war in Iraq, and so on. But in terms relevant to what we're talking about now, about population control, you'll see an article such as one titled The Aletheia Report. Now, just looking at that, you won't know what it means. But basically, that was the title of a secret plan back in the 1970s to bring about euthanasia, a sort of Terry Schiavo situation. And it was secretly developed, and it showed year by year, step by step, how they would use the media and so on to get us to where we are today. So there'll be a variety of subjects there. One last thing about Jim Hunt, who I mentioned before the break. A friend of mine couldn't understand why Hunt was supporting tax-funded abortions. She knew, she was a nurse, and she knew that abortions were legal after Roe v. Wade. But why, you know, the public is opposed to using tax dollars to do this. And so Hunt wrote a letter back to her, and I have a copy of it. And he said the reason was, quote, "We must concentrate on raising new generations of children who are not stunted or handicapped in some way," end quote. Now, think about that. This isn't a general desire, you know, isn't it a shame there are people who are handicapped. This is the woman is already pregnant, and he wants to use tax dollars to pay to her to kill the child because the child is stunted or handicapped in some way. So this is typical of their attitudes. And the last entry that I mentioned, NCEE and Mark Tucker, Tucker had written a book at about the same time. And in there, he was complaining. He said, you know, we're just not doing what we should to manage people. He said the East Germans are doing a far, this is, you know, under the old evil empire of the Soviet Union. The East Germans are doing a far better job at human resource management than we are. So he, you know, would hold up the East Germans of all people as a model that, that we ought to be following. And so, as I mentioned, it's not just a matter of reducing people, meaning to exterminate them when I say population control, but actually managing them. They treat us like human resources. You notice it's no longer personnel because that has the word person in it. We are a resource, and you manage resources like timber, you know, timber resources or coal resources. Right? So they look at us as things to be managed.
And you know, they experiment on us. This is really so unconscionable. For instance, in Europe, they won't allow water fluoridation. but they're fluoridating our water for fertility control. They're not going to tell you that, but of course, if you go up on fluoridealert.com, you'll realize, fluoridealert.org, I'm sorry, they've surrounded that website with all, with net and com, just to confuse you, it's fluoridealert.org, you'll find out that this is the reason so many men have erectile dysfunction, why so many couples have difficulty getting pregnant. It's the fluoride they put in the water, but they can't let the American people know that, and since they control the media, they control our reality, and that's why they want to get the immunizations for everybody, because the mercury poisons fertility. And so, you know, they haven't, since they control the media, the average person has no idea what's really going on. And of course, certainly I love that quotation from David Rockefeller that you have used so often, August of 1973, talking about China. David Rockefeller has just come back from China. They've probably killed close to 100 million people by this time. And he mentions there may have been a little violence over there. But, you know, the idea that the social experiment in China under Chairman Mao is among the most successful and important in history. The social experiment in China under the direction of Chairman Mao is one of the most important and successful in history. It's all a social experiment by the elite on the little ants that they can crush at any time. And at that time, that already killed close to 100 million people in China, having intentionally starved to death between 40 and 43 million people between 1958 and 1962, and you will never see that mentioned here in the United States.
Yeah, he said in that also, he said, regardless of the cost. It's a pretty big cost. Also, just before that, before Rockefeller, remember in part two, I mentioned this Vice President of Planned Parenthood, Frederick Joffe, had this this article printed, and it contained a memo to Population Council President Bernard Berenson, and in there they were listing various ways to reduce U.S. fertility, and one of them was fertility control agents in the water supply, as well as increased courage to increase homosexuality and so forth and so on. And just 9 days later, I put in part two, on March 20, 1969, that's when Dr. Dunnigan attended that conference where the National Medical Director of Planned Parenthood, Richard Day, was talking in Pittsburgh and saying, oh, we're going to have all kinds of hard-to-cure diseases created, and we already have cures for nearly all cancers, but they're being hidden at the Rockefeller Institute, so populations won't increase. Yeah, these are a nasty bunch here. And picking back up on part three where I was, in 1995, the Rockefeller Foundation trustee, James Wolfensohn, he was a trustee from 79 to 85, he becomes president in 95 of the World Bank. Now, he's there in that prominent position for about 10 years until 2005, May 31. And remember what I said about the UN Development Program being an adjunct to the World Bank. The World Bank's funded lots of population control efforts around the world. And specifically regarding Wolfensohn, he was also a trustee of Rockefeller's Population Council from 77 to 84. So he's heavily into that. And then for 10 years, he was at a funding position to actually implement a lot of this. That was July 1 of 95. He became World Bank president. Just 2 years later, the Rockefeller Foundation gives $2 million to Hua Lian Pharmaceutical in Shanghai. That's H-U-A, separate word, L-I-A-N. That's a pharmaceutical company in Shanghai. What's it for? It's to upgrade its factory, which has been used for years to produce RU486 abortion drug as a key ingredient in China's population control strategy. And that's for years they've been doing that. And then, 3 years after 97, in the year 2000, the Washington Post writes a story saying that factory, that same factory, will produce RU486 for the U.S. population. That's the abortion pill, RU486. Rockefeller Foundation says, you know, this is so important, we're going to give you $2 million to upgrade your factory to do this stuff. Okay, that was in 97. It gave them that. The next year, 98, you have a book published. It's titled Threshold 2000, Critical Issues and Spiritual Values for a Global Age. Remember in part two, I said how the Rockefeller Brothers Fund put out this mid-century report that said this new world order they want, they use that term, would have many components, including a spiritual component. Well, in 98, this book is published by something called the Millennium Institute. That had been founded in 1993, and its executive director, Gerald Barney, had been formerly head of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund National Program. Again, Rockefeller Brothers Fund, prominent position, their national program. The Institute, Millennium Institute, had been funded by the Rockefeller Foundation and the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, among many others. And Barney, and he had two other writers with him on this book, Threshold 2000, in this book says, quote, "The premise of sovereignty underlying modern nation states is false. Nations are all interdependent. Nation states must change radically. Within a few decades, the fallacious notion of sovereignty must disappear and be replaced with an understanding that nations, or whatever name we give the institutions that replace nation states, are all intimately interconnected with each other and with the earth," end quote. Now, that's about sovereignty. Doesn't like sovereignty, doesn't like nationalism, doesn't like nation states. But he also talks in there about population. Now, remember, he's been the Rockefeller Brothers Fund National Program. About population, in this book, Barney and the others say that a rapid drop in human fertility is needed. And for that to occur, quote, "it will be necessary to change the religious, social, economic, and legal factors that shape couples' decisions on the number of children they have," end quote. And he goes on and advises humans to work together to, quote, "create the religious, social, and economic conditions necessary to stop the growth of human population," end quote. That's your zero population growth movement. Now, then we come into the year 2002, and once again, I've mentioned this before, but I'll say it again, because this is David Rockefeller in his own book, Memoirs, in his own words, page 405. He says, quote, "some even believe we," that's the Rockefeller family, "are part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will," period. And his second sentence, right after that, he says, "if that's the charge, I stand guilty, and I am proud of it," end quote. That's a very revealing quote. Now, some people, when they read that quote, say, golly, wow, I mean, why would he do that? That must be a slip-up. He must have slipped up. The editors must have missed that. I don't think so. I don't think these guys make mistakes like that. What I think that was, and I've mentioned this before, was a really a what's called a psychological probe. It's sort of like when Terry Schiavo's situation came along. She wasn't the first, she wasn't the worst. But the media and the press made a big deal over her situation. I think that was a psychological probe to see whether the American people had been conditioned to such an extent that they would not stop the killing of this innocent woman. And they were right. The American people will huff and puff, but nothing was really done, even though Florida law said assisted suicide is illegal. And if you believe what her husband and the judge said, which I don't, but if you believe it, this was an assisted suicide, which is supposed to be illegal, but they didn't do anything about it. So anyway, I think this comment by Rockefeller was really a psychological probe by the power elite. Now, they do this periodically to see what the public is willing to accept or overlook. And apparently this probe was successful because, and I'll ask your listeners this, have you seen any media reports about this remark by Rockefeller? Have you seen any large number of the public expressing their shock and outrage? People who listen to this show, I'm sure, do. But this book's in libraries all over the place. You know, Tupelo, Des Moines, everywhere, this book's in libraries. And you haven't really seen, you know, ABC's Nightline or any big expose of this. So once again, I think this was not a slip-up by Rockefeller. I think he deliberately said that. It's sort of in your face. You know, I'm going to say this, and you're not going to do anything about it. And he was right. The public has been conditioned to such an extent to not express their shock and outrage over this, and the media has seen fit not to report it to the public at large.
But, you know, I think that, Dennis, what nobody really wants to say, because everybody feels a little embarrassed about it, is that this whole idea of globalism, people who are internationalists, are traitors to America. They want to destroy the sovereignty of our nation. Now, I think everybody has the right to not appreciate America, and you can still live here. You have that right. But when you are working in government, and when you are the President of the United States, and you're a globalist, and you're dedicated to the destruction of the sovereignty of our nation, and you're subservient to Mr. David Rockefeller, you are a traitor, and you should be tried for treason. And I believe Mr. Rockefeller, for what he has done in using his money to destroy the sovereignty of our nation, when people swear into office, they swear to protect America and defend our Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. These are domestic enemies of America. Mr. Rockefeller, Mr. Ford, Mr. Cheney, Condoleezza Rice, they're all dedicated globalists. And you can't be a globalist and be an American. You can be one or the other, but you can't be both.
Well, that's why this quote by Rockefeller is important, because notice the words he's using. A secret cabal working against the best interest of the United States, conspiring with others to bring about a more integrated global political economic structure. I mean, that's the world government. An integrated global political and economic structure is a government. And so he's using all the key elements there, and like I said, I don't think it was a mistake. I think it's what they do is they have these probes, and then they make these statements, you know, in your face, what are you going to do about it type of quotes. Well, there's a lot more that could be said, but let me get to the final item here since the time's running down. The final item in part three I put as sort of a, you know, here's what they've done. And Dr. Stan has already mentioned about the fertility, you know, fluoride and fertility control. But this, as Dr. Stan has said, is global. It's not just here. In March 6, 2004, the Weekly Trust of Nigeria, that's a newspaper, not the New York Times, not the Washington Post, you know, they're not going to tell you this stuff. But if you look at the Nigerian newspaper, the Weekly Trust, it published an interview with a person named Dr. Haruna Keita, K-A-I-T-A. You can look this up yourself. And he reported that lab tests show the oral polio vaccines given to children contained harmful and toxic.
American Discount Home Medical Equipment sells at discount prices. We sell wheelchairs, oxygen equipment, hospital beds, commodes, bath safety products, walkers, and other items needed for the care of your loved one at home. Our phone number is 1-800-956-6616. We sell at one half of retail price or less. We have free shipping and no sales tax for any shipment outside of California. You can expect to receive the item within 7 days. Our website address is www.home-med-equip.com. Again, our phone number is 1-800-956-6616.
Nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps' potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against radioactive poisoning by filling the thyroid with good iodine. This shields the thyroid and prevents it from absorbing the harmful radioactive iodine. Potassium iodate is better than the iodide form because it is not as likely to cause upset stomachs in children, the elderly, the sick, and pets. Order the official potassium iodate for only $24 and save $5 by calling New Millennium at 888-803-4438. Call now and get free shipping. That's 888-803-4438.
Are you concerned about the high cost of prescription drugs? Since January of 2006, RxDrugCard.com members have saved an average of $33 per prescription filled. That's over 46% savings. The average savings for generic drugs was over 71%. RxDrugCard.com is the only major discount prescription drug plan that offers a price lookup page, so you can get an idea of your discounted price before you enroll. RxDrugCard.com is for anyone who pays for their own prescriptions. There are no age restrictions, all prescriptions are covered, and 95% of all pharmacies in the U.S. participate, including Walmart, Walgreens, CVS Pharmacy, and many more. With RxDrugCard.com, you will save immediately with no messy forms or paperwork. Membership fees start at only $4.50 per month and include a 30-day unconditional money-back guarantee. Visit us at www.rxdrugcard.com or call us at 888-216-2461. That's 888-216-2461. Do it today.
Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and Dr. Cuddy was really what he was telling you is that they put things into the polio vaccine in Nigeria to destroy the fertility of the people there. And they put things into our drinking water and into our immunizations here to destroy our fertility. Are you concerned? Would you like to verify what I'm saying? Go to fluoridealert.org. Fluoridealert.org. Do not go to fluoridealert.com or fluoridealert.net, because they've surrounded that so that you'll go to the wrong site and of course, get the wrong information. Fluoridealert.org, and look it up, or hopefully you'll want to get my talk on called The Hidden Agenda and the syllabus that goes with it that has the abstracts from the Journal of Fluoride, Fluoride Journal, that will verify what we're saying. But we can't let the American males know that we're destroying their virility, can we? Well, after all, we just get them a Viagra pill. Ladies and gentlemen, we're dealing with organized evil. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, shame on you. You need to get my talk on planned population reduction. We'll even tell you how they introduced AIDS into China. It's the most incredible story. It comes right out of the publication of the Council on Foreign Relations, Foreign Affairs magazine. Their logo, a man riding a pale horse. Well, then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get our population control special, or certainly our four-tape set. Actually, you get four-tape sets, a video in my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, in the population control special. Then you really want to get the book, Project Daylily, written by Dr. Garth Nicholson. And, of course, here you'll find out about the new diseases they've unleashed upon the American people. And Dr. Nicholson's been on the front lines of this whole battle. It's a fascinating book, Project Daylily, and they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I do want to mention, for those of you who listen to our programs on shortwave in the evening, and that would, of course, be 8 to 10 on the Pacific Coast and 11 to 1 on the East Coast, our 5.860 megahertz program is changing tonight to 5.835. That's 5.860 is going to 5.835. If you can't remember that, well, you can go up on our internet site at radioliberty.com and get the information. But just remember 5.835. Now, for the first hour, it'll still be, if you go to 5.850, first hour is of that, and then the second hour goes to a different number. But anyway, the 5.860 goes to 5.835 tonight. And then, of course, we hope you'll tell others about our programs and encourage them to listen. If you're not involved helping us get the information out, who's going to be, and if not, now when? We're primarily listener-supported. As you know, we have about 60 outlets every week, but quite frankly, we need your help to continue doing what we're doing. I mean, we're a mom-and-pop store. My wife and my son and I and a couple of our friends keep this ministry going. If you can possibly help us, join the Radio Liberty family or certainly any way that you can participate, we'll appreciate it. You can subscribe to our newsletter. You can join the Radio Liberty family and get either the four best tapes or CDs of the month. And that's $20 a month. Of course, if you can pay more, we'll certainly appreciate it. And then, of course, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to going to our website at radioliberty.com. Your job is to tell other people about our programs. If you have not laid a good supply of emergency food and freeze-dried food, why, please consider buying it through us. We'll be glad to send you a catalog, but you need to have a good supply on hand. We're moving into catastrophic times. They have just rejuvenated. They're rejuvenating all those old Japanese concentration camps. And the figure I have, about $80 million they're putting out for them. I have one article that says only $30 million. Why are they rejuvenating all those old Japanese prison camps from 1941 into 42? Oh, we don't want to forget how terrible it was. Then why are they building new concentration camps? Halliburton, $385 million for detention camps? Well, maybe we might have civilian unrest. And that's what the latest legislation's all about, civilian unrest. We'll be right back here in America in a moment.
nuclear reactors provide economical energy, but would you be prepared during an accident? During nuclear disasters, great amounts of radioactive iodine are released into the atmosphere, which are then readily absorbed into the body. Medical Corps potassium iodate gives you virtually complete protection from the most feared consequence of a nuclear accident, radioactive poisoning. Potassium iodate can protect against...
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And, well, today our special guest is Mr. John Quirk. And John, of course, has a home in both Florida and in France. He's a professor at a university in Paris and certainly one over in London. He actually worked for many years in intelligence. He has contacts throughout the world. And he's certainly one of the most fascinating individuals we have because he's just back from Europe. He was meeting with the foreign minister of Israel just last night. And he has a tremendous grasp on the situation that we're facing today. What most people don't really realize in the tranquility in which we live is that the fact that the whole Near East and Middle East are on the verge of erupting into flames. Certainly there's conflict in Palestine between Hamas and the Fatah group there. There's facing a revolution in Lebanon. Certainly Hezbollah in the north and Hamas on the south threaten the existence of Israel. Certainly most of the Arab countries, certainly are trying to overthrow the yoke of their current leadership and the governments, many of which are hated by the people. And then, of course, we have what's going on in Afghanistan. We have the chaos that's in Iraq. We have the conflict between Israel and Iran. And at any moment, this whole thing could simply explode. And we live here, we sit back here just blithely just saying nothing bad is ever going to happen. And believe me, if the Middle East goes up in flames, why, you think that $100 a barrel oil is high, you haven't seen anything at all. John Quirk, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Always a pleasure, Stan.
Go ahead and why don't you bring our listeners up to date on what's really going on today and about your meeting last night with the Israeli foreign minister.
Well, I think it's very, in some ways, very pessimistic, very negative, and it all goes back to the Israeli invasion. Many American Jews and Israelis are disappointed that it did not succeed, and it has not succeeded in returning the three hostages that were captured by the Muslim extremists there. It's my personal view, and I like Prime Minister Olmert very much, but it's my personal view that he is wounded politically. And as a result of the Israelis not being able to wipe out Hezbollah, that's the main reason that they went in, not just the hostages, Hezbollah has been re-energized by more money coming from Iran through Syria, more weapons that are being shipped in and transshipped in, more Katyusha rockets, more sophisticated rockets, and the Iranian military has supplied intelligence officers and military officers to train Hezbollah. What is happening now, you know, the other shoe is dropping there in the Mideast, and it bodes bad for the United States as well as Israel. And what is happening is that the Syrian government is actively seeking to overthrow the existing Lebanese government. The Syrians are also helping Hezbollah train them. They see Israel as weak. On Israel's other front, there is a battle going on between the Palestinian Fatah and Hamas. Maybe some people look upon it and say, divide and conquer, Israel is doing a good job, let them fight it out. But I don't think so. I think that whoever wins, it's still going to be a very difficult challenge for the Israelis.
Hold that thought for just a moment here, John, if you would, please, as we prepare to bring a new station on board, one of our major stations here in the Central Coast of California. Well, this is Dr. Sten, and our special guest this afternoon is John Quirker. John has spent many years living outside the country. He's been with the intelligence agencies in the past. He has connections all throughout the world. He knows many of the world leaders on a first-name basis. He's always a fascinating guest here, and we were just talking about, of course, what's going on in the Middle East. And in the Near East, of course, we have your struggle between the two components of the Palestinians. You have your conflict between Israel and the Palestinians. Syria is trying to overthrow the existing Lebanese government, and when they do, of course, why the Hezbollah, which is already controls large parts of Lebanon, will certainly be in a much better position. Lebanon is facing a civil war. There's a civil war in Iraq. There's chaos in Afghanistan, even parts of Afghanistan. The British are withdrawing from it because they can't hold it. And then, of course, the eternal conflict between Israel and Iran, with a president there who talks about wiping Israel off the face of the earth. And Israel is in a weakened position. Pick the story up there, please.
Well, the venal country is Syria. Syria is very angry that there are 11,000 United Nations peacekeepers there. The peacekeepers are doing a very good job in stopping the flow of arms against Israel. There's a 20 kilometer, 20 mile, more or less, buffer between Israel and what's happening in Lebanon. And that's helped the Israelis tremendously. The Syrians are very angry about that. They don't want the 11,000 troops there. They think a civil war in Lebanon would make the UN pull out. It would be able then to give a better position to Hezbollah to attack Israel. Hezbollah actually believes it can defeat the Israelis. Israel is in a weakened position economically, psychologically. Many of the Israelis have lost faith in Olmert, the prime minister, who is trying to do the best job he possibly can. They're very disappointed at the conduct of the war last summer. They feel that a lot of the senior military advisors and leaders in Israel did not know what they were doing. They didn't plan the war right. So Israel is now caught between two potential civil wars, the one in Lebanon and the one between Fatah, the Palestinians, and Hamas. Now, stirring up that pot very slowly, and with lots of money and lots of arms, is Iran.
All right, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought for just a moment. And, of course, certainly Iran is financing, is certainly financing both Hezbollah and Hamas. We'll be right back. All right, Dr. Sten, and John is just saying that Iran is certainly doing everything they can to help Hezbollah. They're helping Hamas, putting a lot of money and weapons in there, and certainly putting the tinder there in the Near East, which is going to, sooner or later, and fearfully it may be sooner, flare up into another major war. But now Israel is in a much weaker position than she was in, say, last summer. And, of course, I really felt that Israel should have finished the job. If they were going to go in, finish the job, finish off Hezbollah. They weren't allowed to. International pressure was brought to bear. Hava Yair Salana from the NATO and from the Europe came down and just gave them an ultimatum. You pull out, and unfortunately, Olmert did what he was told to do. So you pick up the story.
Well, here's the real danger point now that is quite shocking and very difficult for most even experienced foreign policy experts to understand. The Israelis, Olmert had a meeting a couple weeks ago with President Putin of Russia. Russia has come in and said, listen, we think we can stop the Iranians from having a nuclear weapons program. Give us time. Give us months. And the Israelis reacted basically saying, well, okay, this looks like a possible solution, which to me is the worst possible solution. You can't trust the Russians as far as you can throw them. Their foreign policy today is completely anti-American. They're doing everything either to thwart and block the United States or to extort the United States. On the other hand, they want to position themselves as a not just the power broker in that area. They want to they're saddling up to Iran. They're conning the Israelis, believe it or not, and they're trying to outmaneuver the United States. And all this is going to do is push many countries to the brink of all-out war.
Well, John, one thing I'd like to ask, is the fact that within this last few days, Olmert has actually, here's the Prime Minister of Israel, came forward and said, well, Israel does have all these nuclear weapons. Now, this is the first time they've ever recognized they had nuclear weapons. And you go ahead and develop your ideas, but I'd like you to cover that. I do not think that was simply a slip of the lip. I think he's been criticized for saying it. I think that was very, very carefully weighed before he made that public statement. So you go ahead and develop your idea of that, but please address that.
Well, I think it's a very good point that you bring up. And what it shows is not only Israel's weakened position, but Israel is really, their back is against the wall. You've had recent statements up till yesterday of, as you mentioned, the Iranian president calling for either the destruction of Israel, or we have to wipe out the Jews, or we have to wipe out Israel. The big Holocaust conference going on now, denying that the Holocaust existed. The Israelis feel really put upon. They're worried that the United States, their main ally, is bogged down in Iraq. They're worried that the United States is going to pull out of Iraq, i.e. the Baker Commission. So I think Olmert had to come out, and it is not such a veiled threat. It's a very real threat against Iran. Iran knows that the Israelis have tactical nuclear weapons and that they'll use them if they're pushed too far. The Iranians don't care. The Iranians feel they are winning. Hezbollah is fronting for them. Syria is fronting for them. They have Russia being very deceptive to the Israelis on their border, not against Iran. I think the Russians are supporting them. They've given them a lot of information and technology regarding nuclear plans. They've given them weapons. They've given them technology. And they probably have given them intelligence, anything to stop the United States. And part of it is all about oil. It's about the oil in Central Asia, and Iran is the gateway to that. Now, let's get back to Israel. What is a likely scenario? The Israelis pretty much have all agreed within their internal policies, military, diplomatic, foreign policy, commerce, that they do not have the ability to take out all 456 so-called research sites that the Iranians have. They are spending tremendous amounts of money in security, protecting their border and using their military against Hamas. They are still worried about a possible eventual pullout of these 11,000 troops, especially if the Syrians foment civil war or overthrow the Lebanese government. And we're starting gradually to see some cracks by people that supported the invasion. Saudis, Kuwaitis, Jordanians, Turks, Egypt, and Libya are now starting to wonder, is Israel in a position really to defeat them? So Olmert's faux pas, if you will, was very carefully planned. He's basically saying, look it, you may think we're weak. We have problems here, but we have nuclear weapons. Don't go too far. Now, I think what is going to happen is that over the next 6 months, the United States is going to make an attempt. I believe it's a feeble attempt, but it's an attempt to talk to the Iranians and the Syrians. I don't think the Syrians and the Iranians, especially with Russian support now, have no intention of making agreement with Israel or the United States. They're biding for time. So the United States is going to do two things. They're going to negotiate with the Iranians, and in the meantime, they are going to lobby hard for the European Union, much of it who has been against Iran, but we wonder about their will to go to war. They're worried about their economy to give approval for the United States to go to war. The United States is going to lobby internally members of Congress, the Democratic Party, all of our think tanks. Please, Bush is saying, everybody must get on board. I think you're going to see some real mettle in Bush in the next couple months. I think he's going to reject the Baker plan partially or out of hand or say something like, yes, some of the points are good, but you know what? We just can't pull out. And we can't pull out. We can't pull out because we need a base there. Israel is pressuring us to do something. We have Russia that is challenging us and blocking us from getting into Central Asia. And we forget, you're dealing with a crazy country, crazy leadership like Iran, that denies the Holocaust, that says Israel should be wiped off the face of the earth, and says they're going to develop nuclear weapons. So deep down, somewhere in the foreign policies of Israel and the United States, this is the bottom line. We cannot accept a fundamentalist state that supports terrorism to be anywhere near the development of nuclear weapons.
But of course, we have one though in Pakistan. Certainly, we have. You know, the Pakistan is a fundamentalist Islamic country, even though they supposedly have a secular leader. But almost everybody else there is fundamentalist, and they have their nuclear weapons. Shouldn't we be worried about them as well?
Well, I think the only thing I disagree upon is the term fundamentalist, and the other thing is we've made enough inroads that the Pakistani government does not support terrorism. There are elements in the Pakistani military and intelligence services, we've weeded a lot of those out, but they do not really support terrorism, and the Indians, they have one of the best intelligence services in the world. They know everything the Pakistanis are going to do. The danger in Pakistan is that Musharraf could be overthrown by a fundamentalist country, fundamentalist group.
That so far
isn't happening. I think the biggest threat that we have in that region of the world is Iran, and they are not backing down. They are close to Israel. Israel is getting more paranoid, more afraid. I mean, just think of the people in Israel and the government when you hear another country saying they should be wiped off the face of the earth. Well, what Iran is looking for is really a preemptive strike. And the preemptive strike policy of the Bush administration, which was instituted after 9/11, has always been there for Israel. So I think, again, getting back to, let's talk a little bit about intelligence. The CIA says they're 5 to 6 years away from developing a nuclear weapon. The Israelis say they probably are closer or already have one. Nobody really knows from human intelligence. So I think we're running the doomsday clock. We're running out of time. Can we go, I would say, 3 or 4 more months with the situation? Maybe. Can we go 6 months longer? I doubt it. I think President Bush has already made up his mind, even though Gates is a new person for the Pentagon. He's going to give him a chance. We're going to see what the Iranians are going to do. And if not, I'm going to say what I've been saying the last 18 months to 2 years. We'll probably take military action against Iran.
Well, now, of course, what implications does that have as far as, you know, the world oil supply? What implications does that have as far as, you know, certainly revolutions in Pakistan and Egypt, certainly in Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, in all those countries down there, maybe even in Turkey itself? I mean, how would the Muslim world accept a nuclear strike on Iran?
Well, it's, you know, don't forget the Iranians are not Arabs. They are Muslims, but they're Persians. And they've never had, there's never been any love lost between Arabs and Persians. The Saudis, the Kuwaitis, all the other countries I mentioned, Libya, even Morocco, Tunisia, they've got no use for Iran. Whether they're Muslim or not, Shia or Sunni, they have no use, and they do not want to see Iran with a Shia arc from Iran, next door to Iraq, next door to Syria and Lebanon, be dominated by Shia. So they don't like the Iranian version of the Shia spreading to other Arab areas. They all may be Shia, but there's a difference between the Arabs and the Persians in Iran. So I think that that's something the United States has to exploit. And we have a lot of our own internal problems with people in Congress here. The American public is getting tired of the war in Iraq. And then our allies, the Europeans, you know, they've got so many problems. They're starting...
Hold on, I'll be right back in just a minute. And this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk, and he's talking about, of course, the fact that, you know, since we've been dependent to some extent upon our allies in Europe to help us as far as Afghanistan is concerned and backing us in Iraq, but John is saying that our allies in Europe, and certainly I assume that would include the British, are beginning to have domestic problems because the war is extremely unpopular in both England and in Europe with the general population. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes, things are really cracking. MI5, the domestic version of the FBI in England, issued a report 3 weeks ago that said that there are large numbers of Muslim students, young people, that just hate the West and are preparing to be terrorists. And Tony Blair came out and said, we're going to fight this problem for generations. I had a chance to talk to the former general of Afghanistan, because the British really have a tremendous leadership role in Afghanistan, and he spent most of the evening, I attended a meeting at the House of Lords, he spent most of the evening bashing the United States, criticizing our plan, the way our special forces operate within Afghanistan. His name is General Jack Teverell, and I went up after the dinner and I said, you know, I'm really shocked how you just sat and bashed the United States. But it's uniform. It's in all areas of the British government except Tony Blair. It's in even the opposition. It's in the military. It's in the intelligence services. And we do have some consensus. Certainly England's always been a great ally of ours, but we do have consensus with the British, the French, the Germans certainly, the Italians are coming into it, that we have to do something about Iran. But they are all anti-Bush. They're anti-American when it comes to what we've done in Iraq. And now they're starting to bring up things. Over the last week, I talked to people in all these countries. They're saying, look it, you know, we're having one of the warmest winters in history in Europe, and it's got to be with all the explosions and global warming, and the United States is to blame for that. So, I mean, the United States is taking the hits all over the place, and to my way of thinking, we're trying to do the best possible thing that we possibly can do. And then our old enemies and adversaries, our old enemies and new adversaries, Russia and China, are playing this for all they can possibly get out of it to help their own countries and their own foreign policy. The Russians are using energy as extortion. Putin is a criminal. He runs a criminal country, and he's expanding KGB operations against Western Europe, against the old Eastern Europe. They're putting billions and billions of equal to dollars into their intelligence operations, just like they did in the Cold War. And they want to challenge the United States. They want to thwart and block us from expanding. And they see trouble in the Mideast as one way to do it. They see trouble with Iran as one way to do it. And they're trying to split us from Europe, split us from the Arabs, and split us from China. So I think over the next 6 months, America is going to be in a crisis mode like we haven't seen probably in the last decade.
Well, I'm sure that the Chinese and the Russians would like to fight to the last American soldier in the Middle East, and my concern is I hope that they don't get a chance to see that. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Mr. Quirk is talking about really how the Russians and the Chinese are trying to exploit the difficult situation that is unfolding there in the Middle East. And of course, the Russians have promised the Israelis they're going to come over there and try to intervene with the Iranians to try to keep them from developing a bomb. But, of course, John feels that Mr. Putin is running a criminal organization there in Russia, and I certainly tend to agree with him. You know, the president may be able to look into his eyes and see his soul, but when I look into those eyes, I see evil. So go right ahead, John.
Well, I think there's also some myths that are floating around. There's tremendous conspiracy theories about 9/11, that the United States or Israel planned this thing. I mean, usually by a bunch of screwballs, but there is a myth that kind of disturbs me, and it's a myth that they say our military is overextended. And that is just not true. Our military is at full strength. We have new secret weapons. We have expanded, refurbished cruise and Tomahawk missiles. We have 15 carrier task forces that have reserves and weapons and are at sea, and our sailors, some 250,000 of them, are very well trained. We have Air Force bases all over the world now, Romania, Bulgaria, in the Middle East, in Turkey, in Kuwait, and Diego Garcia, and we are expanding bases in the Pacific with really new sophisticated stealth bombers, F-22s, and so on. So our military is not understaffed, and it is not weak by any stretch of the imagination. This is a myth that's been going on.
Well, certainly we have we spend more on our military than almost all the rest of the world put together, certainly as much as the next 20 nations of the world combined. So we have the most powerful military in the world, but it almost appears as if some people in our government really want to dominate the whole world.
Well, I think there's a natural growth to fill in the vacuum of the old Soviet Union that has failed. They failed in their former republics in Eastern Europe, in Africa and Asia, and people have invited the United States in, not just for military or training by the FBI or expanded CIA posts or military posts, but we're expanding in areas of the Treasury, the Commerce Department, helping American companies, whether it's in Dubai or Jordan or Lithuania or Latvia. The old Yankee is there trading and making money and shipping goods. Our Commerce Department in all of our embassies is unbelievable, helping to promote American books, engineering, mechanical parts, you name it, software, Microsoft, intellectual properties. And then we've expanded under, which I work in a lot, Mutual Legal Assistance Treaty, we've expanded our treaties all over the world to strengthen and control the flow of money. A lot of people don't like that. But we basically dominate most of the banking havens. Switzerland, Liechtenstein, Luxembourg, Guernsey, Isle of Man, the Cook Islands, Cyprus, Monaco. We've put forward, a lot of people don't know this, treaties that control money and identify money in those places so it doesn't flow out of Western coffers.
But
so,
of course, the thing, if you control the money, you control the world. I mean, this really almost is, with the criticisms that are made of America wanting to control the world, by controlling money, we do control the economies of the world.
We do, and you know, you have this venal character, Kofi Annan, who badmouthed the United States and just trashed us when he's such a hypocrite, when he let his own son engage in food for oil and oil for food and take money, and the UN and UNESCO, where I've had a lot of experience because I lived in Paris a long time, I worked during the Reagan administration gathering a lot of the information that the KGB was using UNESCO to travel around the world on. They are just wholly owned either by the Arabs, the Arab League. It's full of nepotism, bloated pensions and payrolls. They vote against the United States, 67 to 80% of the world. If you look at all 192 countries of the world, the African and Asian and some Latin countries, on every little issue, constantly vote against the United States. And we fund, I think the United Nations, 25%. And we fund even more of UNESCO. So a lot of these organizations are almost irrelevant. They criticize the United States, they badmouth us, they work against us, but organizations like UNESCO can't even wipe out mosquitoes in part of Africa. They can't even, you know, they're supposed to do cultural and scientific things. Well, here's their...
Hold that thought right there, John, okay. Please. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our special guest this afternoon, John Quirk. Go right ahead, John. You were just saying that, you know...
If you look at these world organizations, if you look at UNESCO, which President Bush just joined again and funded them millions of dollars, UNESCO last year, through Kofi Annan, really conspired with, in this case, the French. And what happened was France started their foreign policy under Chirac, going around stating that if the Americans weren't always involved in war and spending money in the military area in Iraq and invading countries, they'd have more money to spend on AIDS in Africa. Now, he thought he was going to win points with the Africans. President Bush outmaneuvered him and gave something like $500 million for AIDS in Africa. Okay, so that's an example of us using money, our wealth, that the Europeans don't have. Okay, John Bolton, I thought, was a very good ambassador at the UN. He tried to do something. He tried to call for reform in the UN. They blocked him. They denigrated him. They applauded when he left. But he said it like it was. The UN needs reform. And here Kofi Annan comes out and says they need third world members of the Security Council. Well, that's not what the UN was set up for. It was set up for the major powers that won World War II to keep a handle on things. How could you possibly have a second or third rate power or even a landlocked African country be a permanent member of the Security Council? And there's no way the United States, England, or Australia, or Canada, would even accept that. China would probably accept it because they're trying to pander to the Africans and the Latin Americans and the other Asians to position themselves in a better position. But it's not going to happen. The United States and the other powers just aren't going to have it. The UN consistently fails in almost all of their missions. They have succeeded in some peacekeeping areas, but look at Darfur. Here you have Muslim militias, many of them Shia, some Sunni, wiping out black Africans, and the Europeans don't say anything about it and can't do anything about it. You send UN people, observers in, and what happens is the European countries that have large Muslim populations are afraid to offend the Muslims by condemning the Muslim militias. So racism and genocide continues.
Oh, you hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment as we bring all of our stations back on board right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is John Quirk. Before we go on, John, I'd like you to give you an opportunity to get your website out so people could go and read those great articles that you write and that you send to me. And then, of course, if they are interested at all in assets recovery, why, of course, that's your specialty. So why don't you go ahead and get information out so people would know how to get in touch with you if they'd like to.
Thanks very much. Our website is www.assetlocationinternational.com. I'm sorry it's such a long one, but it's Asset, A-S-S-E-T, location, international.com. And it'll basically explain what our company does.
All right, and what about the website where they can pick up your articles?
It's on our website.
All right, fine.
The articles on MLAT, banking secrecy, and my national security background is on the website.
All right, well, John was just saying that what we have in Africa today, why we have, of course, the genocide that's going on in Darfur, but, of course, the European countries don't want to really do much of anything about it because they're afraid of offending the Muslim population because it's Muslims who are over there. Sorry, Arab Muslims, Sunni and Shia both, but they're killing the black people there. And those are Muslims as well. And yet nobody wants to really speak out. Everybody's against it. Isn't it terrible? But when push comes to shove, the genocide continues.
Yes, and I think in the next couple of years it's going to be a crisis for France, Spain, Italy, Germany, Belgium that have large populations of Muslims that are coming into the mainstream political area. Most of them vote left-wing. They're not conservatives. The Europeans can't stem the flow of illegal immigration. They are becoming more and more against Turkey, which the United States supports, coming into the EU, and that'll be a crisis point for Europe and probably the United States. And then, of course, the whole thing, you know, there's always an outside actor, as we would say in the political science business, of something happening. And I think this year the outside actor, even though we have these crisis points with Iran and Venezuela and let's not forget North Korea, but the outside actor is going to be the economy and oil. If we have either another major terrorist incident anywhere in the world, or especially in the United States, or if the United States does in fact take military action against Iran, even though, let's say, it's a limited action, 2 week airstrikes, that could really tank the European economy, it could damage our economy, and then the economic issues of the world will take precedent over the political and diplomatic. And usually when there's a downturn in the economy, it's much harder to turn that around than it is to settle something diplomatically or even through military action. And there's a lot of signs, I think, worldwide that could affect this, even though there's many positive things about the stock market going up, unemployment down, housing market maybe turning around, the Federal Reserve thinks inflation's in control. If there's a major military conflict, the rippling effect would be tourism, as you've mentioned a number of times correctly, higher oil and gasoline prices, which would certainly affect, you know, General Motors and Ford, which are in economic difficulties right now. So I think we're in a situation where a crisis is looming, and everybody's kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop. The other thing that seems to be failing around the world is agreements in the diplomatic area. We talk, diplomacy is really the art of negotiation, and we're talking to the Russians, we're talking to the Chinese, we're talking to the Europeans, the Israelis are talking to Fatah, they're trying to work out things, but what's happening is everyone is afraid to make an agreement, a final agreement on, say, peace with the Palestinians or on issues that the Iranians should stop their nuclear development or the issue that the North Koreans must stop their nuclear development or even on the other side that the United States should pull out of Iraq or do certain things to back down. So it's all the countries, I think, in today's world are very selfish, and the UN has failed as a unit for diplomacy and negotiation. It's completely failed. And some of these other organizations that the United States has always supported, NATO, they are succeeding. They are coming together. So it's a very confusing world on many planes.
Well, I would like to ask you a question. I asked you this on our program a couple of days ago, but I wanted my audience to hear what you had to say. And I was simply pointing out that certainly within the last week or so, Congress has voted to rehabilitate all the Japanese prison camps going back to 1942. A figure I had was somewhere between $30 and $80 million they're going to put out just so we'll have all those prison camps kept up in good working shape, because we never want to forget, of course, what they were used for, the injustice. And then, of course, we find the government putting out $385 million for Halliburton to build detention camps. And then, simply last month, two of the most incredible pieces of legislation, the Military Commission Act and the John Warner Act, certainly the Defense Authorization Act, which really gives the president the ability to establish martial law in America in case there is a national crisis of one sort or another. And the question rises, do you really think that maybe they anticipate a crisis, and all of these things that they're doing is just two steps ahead of this common folks? They know there's going to be a crisis, and they want to be prepared to handle it.
Well, I think there's something in the wind. There is something going on. There was a recent article the other day that came out, which is somewhat bizarre, but in some cases accurate, in other cases unfair. It's called, "Is George Bush the Manchurian Candidate?" And it's by a man named Robert Bozanko, who is a professor of history at the University of Houston. And he goes on and talks about some of the negative effects that Bush has done, and installing certain things like Homeland Security, the Patriot Act, which to a certain extent, and I hate to admit it, has restricted a lot of our freedoms. And it seems like Warner's bill and another bill are preparing us for some kind of possibility of civil disorders in the United States. I mean, I lived through the 60s, and I'm from Chicago. I'll never forget during the Civil Rights Movement, the 82nd Airborne was bivouacked over in Grant Park and in other parks, and I never thought I'd see that in the United States. There were military troops in many of our cities, because we had a lot of civil disorder protests against the Vietnam War, and the civil rights movement was starting. I don't think the government sees that happening. There isn't a big war protest movement against Iraq, and even some of the way out liberals like Sean Penn and Jane Fonda and Madonna and Tim Robbins have kind of gone to ground. But I think the government is afraid of something else. I think they're afraid of organized groups like the militias that are angry about immigration, the militias that are angry about the country becoming Latino, at least the perception of that, the different kinds of terrorist groups that could be based in the United States starting trouble. So I think that was basically the purpose of the legislation, and they didn't publicize as much, because I don't think they wanted to get the American people worried.
But of course, in other words, they know something, or they fear things, but they're not going to tell us really what this is all about. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. I think that there's a lot of other things going on. I mean, the president's popularity is very all-time low. Some people think the Bush administration has actually increased the global threat of terrorism. In October of 2002, the CIA warned the military action in the Middle East would foment serious resistance and recruit more terrorists. And I think some people went on to say it was edited, that it could also cause problems here in the United States. So, I mean, Porter Goss, the outgoing CIA director last year, said that Iraq had become a cause for extremists, both in the United States as well as in the Middle East. So something's going on. I think they're worried. I think that the Bush administration is trying to look at all angles. The other thing that's happening, Bush and Rumsfeld promised a war on the cheap, somewhere in the area, I think, of $100, but no more than $200 billion. I'm told that the General Accounting Office is going to say it could easily reach $1 trillion to $2 trillion, including the cost of rehabilitating wounded American soldiers, reconstruction. They're projecting it'll cost $40 billion just to repair our existing equipment. So, you know, I think the other shoe that could drop, and you don't hear about this a lot, is how the middle class is basically getting squeezed. Now, in the state of Florida, I'll just tell you about my friends and people I know. Their electric bills have doubled. Their tax bills have gone up 20 to 30%. Their insurance policies have doubled largely because of hurricanes and natural disasters. And people here are getting squeezed. They're working two jobs. The mother works, the father works, sometimes the teenager works, and I live in a fairly affluent area, but people are still having a rough time. So I think a lot of people are just basically making it, and a lot of Americans are starting to resent the large expenditures that this Iraq war has caused. And I think we've misread a lot of things. I don't think anybody, you know, we have very brilliant analysts in the CIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency, the State Department has some great people, Commerce Department and the FBI. I don't know anybody except a few outside academic professors that predicted the kind of savage violence that we're seeing in Iraq. And these are analysts in our government that study Iraq, Central Asia, the Mideast, the Near East. Nobody ever, to my knowledge, and I follow all these reports in the government agencies, nobody ever told the president or the National Security Council, hey, look it, there's going to be big trouble between Shia and Sunnis. Yeah. They thought the problem would be with the Kurds. So that trouble, And the insurgency advocates coming from Iran have caused what President Bush and Rumsfeld thought was going to be a $100 billion war to go up to a trillion.
But, of course, the thing is, John, the thing that bothers me is that, you know, had it not been for Paul Bremer going over and destroying the Iraqi army and destroying the Iraqi police force and destroying the Iraqi civil service, you had a stable society. And maybe you didn't like Saddam Hussein, but it was a stable society, and if you didn't interfere with the government, why, you were all right. You spoke out against the government, why, they made your life pretty miserable and they might kill you. But we took a stable society, and how could anybody think it would turn out any differently? John, pardon me, certainly Paul Bremer and the people he represents are very smart. They knew if they destroyed the infrastructure of society, why, we were going to have problems. And to this very day, 3.5 years after we began, we still don't have an Iraqi army. There was a fine Iraqi army before, and yes, we haven't been able to rebuild it.
Well, I agree with you, and here's the other problem here. In the State Department just last spring, their assessment was even more bleak. They identified something like 11,000 terrorist incidents in 2005 that killed something like 15,000 people. The catalyst for that is also there's been hundreds of new, what they call, difficult to detect groups who are enticing new members, and part of that rallying is the fact that we're occupying Iraq. And all I'm saying is the bottom line for that is if we predicted 100 to 200 billion in the beginning of the war, and now the General Accounting Office is saying, and I'm going to quote, could easily reach 1 trillion or 2 trillion, I think the whole war on terrorism is probably going to cost us trillions and trillions of dollars. Now, we are a very rich country, and we instituted, I believe, all kinds of tax breaks a couple weeks ago, and we are definitely getting richer. We're producing more revenue, but I don't know how we're going to keep up with trillion-dollar deficits.
Well, not only that, but of course we're having to borrow about $3 billion every single day from other countries so we can pay all of these things. We're getting the war on the cheap because we're not having to pay for it. I think if every American had to put out an extra $5,000 a year in taxes, you'd probably hear an awful lot of complaints. But as long as we don't have to pay for the war, we get it on the cheap, most Americans aren't going to be concerned unless it's their son or their daughter who's coming back either dead or crippled.
Yes, and much of the U.S. debt, like you say, is held by China, whose own economy has erupted and now presents a serious challenge to U.S. influence in markets all over the world. In fact, China has just reached $1 trillion in currency reserves, more than one-fifth of all the global reserves. And while the U.S. is spending, I think, about $8 million, like you said, $8 million per hour in Iraq, a general accounting office said it may go up to $15 million per hour. America's foreign reserves are being depleted by something like $100 million an hour. And here's the thing. It's complicated, but the Chinese are hourly adding $30 million to their economy. So right now, China could now purchase all the gold and all the vaults and all the central banks twice over, according to the British Economist magazine. So we are in a much more delicate and dangerous position politically, militarily, and economically than we were prior to the Iraqi invasion. And the worst thing, because I teach overseas, I teach Muslims and diplomats and ambassadors from all over, our national prestige and national security has suffered, and I think the economic impact is going to be felt for a lot of years. And then, in combining that economic impact, we've got more illegal immigration coming into the country. We've lost a lot of our manufacturing base. We don't really make anything anymore. And I just think one major hit could really topple our economy big time.
Well, of course, I think they anticipate that. I think that's why they're passing all of these rather draconian laws. I suspect that the people in positions of power know exactly what the future holds. And the last thing they want is, of course, for us to know. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program with Mr. John Quirk. Well, John, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program for us.
Well, I hate to leave on such a negative point of view, especially during the holidays. I'd like to focus, maybe summarize some positive views. I think that the relationships between Jews and Christians in America are becoming much, much closer, kind of against what's perceived as a common enemy. I think that eventually the Europeans hopefully will see the light of day. I think it's up to the United States, like, you know, Churchill did during World War II, and the United States, and we had great leaderships under Franklin Roosevelt, will stay the course and stand up to countries like Russia. I hope that we eventually can make some kind of better agreement with the expansion of China. And I think also, when you're talking about the kind of money we're spending in Iraq, I think one of the problems we're going to start to see, and we have to turn that around now, I think Congress is trying to address it, we've got to start to take care of our own people in this country. We've got to give more scholarships to minorities. We've got to give more tuition loans. A lot of students are having a hard time. I think the cost of going to college at a school like Notre Dame or Boston College is about $50,000, but the University of Miami is up there at about $40,000 too. So University of Berkeley is expensive. So I think we've got to do something for our own people, our young people. I think we need to put more money in our schools. We still have large amounts, tremendous drug problems with now meth and cocaine is back up there, and marijuana's all over, and I think we have to start spending more money on not just enforcement but education, and I think that we have to start taking care of our own people here. And I'm a Republican, but I think probably this is what the Democrats are going to be throwing out. It's going to appeal to large numbers of Americans, and I don't think it makes a big difference who runs on the Democratic Party. I think if they have a good program, they're probably going to take Congress and the White House away from the Republicans.
Well, I think we're living in very, very exciting times. I certainly agree with you that we're really looking at a tinder keg over there in the Middle East, and we got real problems at home here. And we're having to borrow money, you know, up to the tune of $3 billion a day. I just don't know how we're going to fund the war and, of course, these wonderful times at home. But, well, it will be fascinating. We'll look forward to talking to you again real soon.
God bless. Merry Christmas. Thank you.
And you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Merry Christmas. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John Kirk is a fascinating individual. As you know, we wouldn't agree on everything, but I want you to hear what he has to say, because he has contacts all throughout the world. The problem is, of course, that it was our CIA that brought the radical Islamic mullahs to power in Iran. And then, of course, if you go into the background of what really happened, we financed this whole radical Islamic movement from its very inception, long before, of course, the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan. If you haven't read the book, The Devil's Game, let me suggest that The Devil's Game by Robert Dreyfus going into the background of the financing of the Islamic Brotherhood, which was the precursor to Al-Qaeda. And I would like to suggest that nothing is as it appears to be. You really need to get our three pamphlet sets on Foreknowledge 911 to understand what really happened on that terrible day that changed America forever. We actually have five videos on this, or four videos and a DVD. 911 Mysteries, 911 Press for the Truth, Terror Storm by Alex Jones, In Plain Sight, and The Day That Changed America Forever. That is the video, and we can get it for you in DVD. You need to get these. You can get all nine of them for at a reduced price. All five of them at a reduced price, $89.95. But you have to understand what really happened on 9/11. We have not been told the truth. Certainly you'll want to read my August, September, October, and soon to be published November newsletter to get a grasp of how this was all planned ahead of time, and why they had to do this, and the reason they did is because they had to get us into a war in the Middle East. And the next step is going to be, I fear, a war with Iran. And I certainly agree with Mr. Quirk that this is going to lead to terrible, terrible problems here in the United States. And when we do have a war with Iran, why, you think that your gasoline is expensive now? Why, you're going to see gasoline at $8, $10 a gallon. You're going to see lowered living standards for the middle class, and that's part of the plan. If you have not yet seen my sustainable development syllabus and actually gotten a video that goes with that, you need to get it. You get the Earth Charter there. It's the master plan laid out by some of the richest people in the world. Maurice Strong, Stephen Rockefeller, and certainly Mikhail Gorbachev, the former dictator of Russia, have gotten together and teamed up to write the Earth Charter. You need to read it. You need to understand that they're talking about equitable distribution of wealth within nations. Well, that's communism, of course. They're talking about your wealth, not their wealth. And then equitable distribution between nations, and that's how they're going to impoverish the American people. Understand that nothing is going on today that is not part of a plan, whether it's a plan of men or the spiritual forces that are energizing this. Time alone will tell. But there really are spiritual forces. If you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, you need to get it. And then, of course, you need, of course, to get the various things that we offer, the Ted Flynn's wonderful book, Hope of the Wicked. That's Hope of the Wicked by Ted Flynn. You need to get the book we're offering by Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil. And we suggest you get that along with the four tape set, my interviews with Malachi Martin, where in one of them he talks about the satanic ceremony held in the basement of the Vatican. And, of course, the book is written as fiction, but off the record, off the air. Why, Malachi Martin told me, yes, there really was this satanic ceremony. Now, this does not involve most of the people in the Vatican, but there is a small group that know exactly what's going on. You'll certainly want to get the book we carry called Diary of a Devil Hunter. You'll want to get our books on the supernatural. You'll want to get the book we carry, The Beautiful Side of Evil, the 4-tape set on the supernatural, the 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley, the leading Satanist of the last century. You want to get our 4-tape sets on Masonry, and what is Masonry all about? And then you need to understand that there are many organizations out there. Now, let me just mention, we are going to be changing for our evening shortwave frequency from 5.835 to 5.86 ohm. And then, of course, we certainly want to mention that please pray for Radio Liberty.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
On the Information Radio Network, I'm Laura Lee Shull. Astronauts have started retracting solar panels at the International Space Station as they work to upgrade the outpost's electrical system. Tony Whitten has the details.
Watching the golden solar panels intently, astronaut Sonny Williams gave the command to cause the panels to start folding inward.
On the big loop, going to retract. Ready, ready, now.
Astronauts are doing the retraction in stages to check for any problems. Midway through, engineers did look at one section of the panels that didn't seem to fold just right, but engineers didn't report any immediate problems. The panels need to be retracted so they don't collide with another solar array that is slated to start rotating and follow the sun, all part of upgrading the station's power system so more modules can be added.
Former Enron CEO Jeffrey Skilling is in federal prison in Minnesota. He began serving his 20-